Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of the Pop Read. Today, we are going to be reading our 12th chapter. You were probably wondering, first episode, why 12th chapter of this year's Wumpus in the first book? So, it's really because I'd kind of read some and I decided to do podcasts and all that. And I'll tell you about the first few parts that happened in the Heroes of Olympus, which was like Jason, who is a demigod, waking up in the middle of a bus. Literally a bus. And then he was in this weird school called the Wild Kids School, whatever it's called, and he had two people next to him, Piper and Leo, these two kids. And problem is, he lost his memory somehow. Jason lost his memory. And, you know, Annabeth, Percy's missing. That is a big harm to Annabeth because Percy is her boyfriend. I didn't know that. And so, if Percy's her boyfriend and he's missing, she's gotta find him. And Hera, or if you're a Roman, you can call her Juno. She is kind of, she gave her a voice message in the head when she was sleeping that find the person with the lawsuit and you'll get sense of Percy. And he found Jason, which was the one that had the lost shoe, because they were fighting strong monsters and he lost his shoe, probably. They realized Jason can fly, and eventually it was Piper, the daughter of Aphrodite, and Leo was the son of Hephaestus. And very long after, realizing Jason actually is the son of Zeus. One of the big three. And after that, it's kind of like, after that, we got kind of like a recap of Leo's old memory with Tia Melita, which was his worst babysitter. It's this old, but it was Hera, actually. Get used to seeing Hera if, like, you're doing, like, Roman history, because I'm like, more like a Greek history guy, so I'm gonna say Hera. So, like, Hera is actually Tia Melita, his, like, babysitter. And then, like, at the end of the chapter 11, we kind of know that Leo had fire powers, and he accidentally killed his mother with it. So now we're going to read chapter 12, Leo. If you don't know why these chapters are called by the names of the characters, it means, like, by their perspective, or, like, they're mainly talking about, like, his character. So we'll start. We'll read two chapters a day, hopefully, and I am probably going to upload every day. If I don't, please don't blame me. And if I get any stuck on the words, please say in the comments, like, please tell me. And I'm gonna try to, like, help myself. And I just want to spread, like, the love of reading. And I really encourage you to, like, read more. It's helpful. So now we're gonna start reading. Chapter 12, Leo. The woods weren't like any place he'd been before. Leo hadn't been raised in a north house and apartment complex. The wildest things he'd ever seen were the rattlesnake in the cow pasture and his Aunt Rosa in her nightgown, until he was sent to the wilderness school. Even there, the school had been in the desert. No trees with gar roots to trip over, no streams to fall in, no branches casting dark, creepy shadows, and owls looking down at him with their big reflective eyes. This was the twilight zone. He stumbled along until he was sure no one back at the cabins could possibly see him. He summoned fire, flames dancing along his fingertips, casting enough light to see. He danced along his fingertips, casting enough light to see. He hadn't tried to keep a sustained burn going since he was five. At that picnic table, since his mom's death, he'd been too afraid to try anything. Even this tiny fire made him feel guilty. He kept walking, looking for Dragon type. Clues. Giant. Footprints. Trampled trees. Swaths. Burning. A burning forest. Something. Something that they couldn't exactly sneak around, right? But he saw nada. Once he glimpsed a large, furry shaped like a wall or a bear, but it stayed away from his fire, which was fine by Liam. Then, at the bottom of a clearing, he saw the first trap, 100-foot-wide crater ringed with boulders. Leo had to aim it with pretty ingenious. In the center of the depression, a metal vat the size of a hot tub had been filled with bubbly dark liquid, Tabasco sauce, and motor oil on a pedestal suspended over the vat. An electric fan rotated in a circle, spraying the fumes across the forest. Could metal dragons smell? The vat seemed to be unguarded. But Leo looked closely, and in the dim light of the stars and his handled fire, he could see the glint of a metal beneath the dirt and leaves a bronze net light lining. This entire crater, or maybe a seethe, wasn't the right word. He could sense it there, as if the mechanism was emitting heat, revealing itself to him. Six large strips of bronze stretched out from the vat like the spokes of a wheel. They would be pressure sensitive, Leo guessed. As soon as the dragon stepped on, the net would spring closed, and voila, one gift wrapped monster. Leo edged closer. He put his foot on the nearest trigger strip. As he expected, nothing happened. They had to have set the net for something really heavy. Otherwise, they could catch an animal, a human, smaller monster, or whatever. He doubted there was anything else as heavy as a metal dragon. These woods. At least he hoped it wasn't. He picked his way down the crater and approached the vat. The fumes were almost overpowering, and his eyes started watering. He remembered a time when Tia Kalita, Hera, whatever, had made him chop jalapenos in the kitchen, and he'd gotten the juice in his eyes. Serious pain. But of course, she'd been like, "Endure it, little hero." The Aztecs of your mother's homeland used to punish bad children by holding them over a fire filled with chili peppers. Honestly, that doesn't sound bad. You're just putting them over. You may feel some heat, but... Yeah. Oh, that was me talking, not Leo. I'm just thinking, that doesn't sound so bad. But we're going to keep reading. They raised many heroes that way. A total psycho, that lady. Leo was so glad she was on a quest to rescue her. Tia Kalita would have loved this vat because it was way worse than jalapeno juice. Leo looked for a trigger, something that would disable the net. He didn't see anything. He had a moment of panic. Nisa had said there were several traps like this in the woods, and they were planning more. What if the dragon had already stepped into another one? How could Leo possibly find them all? He continued to search, but he didn't see any release mechanism, no large button labeled off. It occurred to him that there might not be one. He started to despair. And then he heard the sound. It was more of a tremor, the deep sort of rumbling you hear in your gut rather than your ears. Good. He just kept examining the trap, thinking must be a long way off. It's pounding its way through the woods. I gotta hurry. Then he heard a grinding snort, like steam pours out of the metal barrel. His neck tingled. He turned slowly at the edge of the pit. 50 feet away, two glowing red eyes were staring at him. The creature gleamed in the moonlight, and Leo couldn't believe something that huge had sneaked up on him so fast. Too late, he realized. Its gaze was fixed on fire in his hand, and he extinguished the flames. He could still see the dragon just fine. It was about 60 feet long, snout to tail. Its body made of interlocking bronze plates. Its claws were the size of a butcher knife, and its mouth was lined with hundreds of dagger-sharp metal teeth. Steam came out of its nostrils, like it snarled like a chainsaw cutting through a tree. It could have bitten Leo in half easy, or stomped him flat. It was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen, except for one problem that completely ruined Leo's plan. "You don't have wings," Leo said. The dragon's snarl died. It tilted its head as if to say, "Why aren't you running away in terror?" "Hey, no offense," Leo said. "You're amazing. Good God, who made you? Are you a hydraulic or nuclear powered or what? But if it was me, I would have put wings on you. What kind of dragon doesn't have wings? I guess maybe you're too heavy to fly." "I should have thought of that." The dragon snored more confused now. It was supposed to trample Leo. This conversation thing wasn't part of the plan. It took a step forward and Leo shouted, "No!" The dragon snarled again. "It's a trap, broad brain," Leo said. "They're trying to catch you." The dragon opened his mouth and blew fire. A column of white-hot flames billowed over Leo, more than he'd ever tried to endure before. He felt as if he were being hosed down with a powerful, very hot fire hose. It stung a little, but he stood his ground. When the flames died, he was perfectly fine. Even his clothes were okay, which Leo didn't understand. But for which he was grateful. He liked his army jacket, and having his pants seared off would have been pretty embarrassing. The dragon stared at Leo. Its face didn't actually change, being made of metal at all. But Leo thought he could read its expression. "Royal crispy fitter." A spark flew out of its neck, like it was about to short circuit. "You can't burn me," Leo said, trying to sound stern and calm. He never had a dog before, but he talked to the dragon the way he thought you talked to a dog. "You'd stay, boy. Don't come any closer. I don't want you to get caught. See, they think you're broken and have to be scrapped, but I don't believe that. I can fix you if you'll let me." The dragon creaked, roared, and charged. The trap sprang. The floor of the crater erupted with the sound like a thousand trash cans banging together. Dirt and leaves flew, metal net flashing. Leo was knocked off his feet, turning upside down and doused in Tabasco sauce and oil. He found himself sandwiched between the vat and the dragon, and it thrashed trying to free itself from the net that had wrapped around them both. The dragon blew flames in every direction, lighting up the sky and setting tree on fires. Oil and sauce burned all over them. It didn't hurt Leo, but it felt nasty. But it left a nasty taste in his mouth. "I want to say a comment, heat guys. Wouldn't you technically get the cancer, sick, or die? If the oil, how would it just leave a nasty taste in your mouth?" "Another comment. Oil does smell good. Yeah, gas oil." "Okay, No more comments. Will you stop that? He yelled. Dragon kept squirming. Leo realized he would get crushed if he didn't move. It wasn't easy, but he managed to wriggle out from the dragon and the vat. He squirmed his way through the net. Fortunately, the holes were plenty big enough for a skinny kid. He ran to the dragon's head. It tried to snap at him, but its teeth were tangled in the mesh. It blew fire then, but seemed to be running out of energy. This time, the flames were only orange. They sputtered before them. They even reached Leo's face. "Listen, man," Leo said. "You're just going to show them where you are. Then, you just need to show them where you are. Then they'll come and break out the acid and the metal cutters. Is that what you want?" The dragon's jaw made a creaking sound like it was trying to talk. "Okay then," Leo said. You'll have to trust me." And Leo set to work. It took them almost an hour to find the control panel. It was right behind the dragon's head, which made sense. He'd elected to keep the dragon in the net because it was easier to work with the dragon constrained. But the dragon didn't like it. Hold still, Leo scolded. The dragon made another creaking sound that might have been a whimper. Leo examined the wire inside the dragon's head. He was distracted by a sound in the woods, but when he looked up, it was just a tree spirit, a dryad. Leo thought they were called putting out the flames in her branches. Fortunately, the dragon hadn't started an all-out forest fire. But still, the dryad wasn't too pleased. The girl's dress was smoked. She smothered the flames with a silky blanket, and when she saw Leo looking at her, she made a gesture that was probably very rude in dryad. Then she disappeared in a green poof of mist. Leo returned his attention to the ringing. It was ingenious, definitely, and it made sense to him. This was the motor control relay. This processed sensory input from the eyes. This disc. "Huh," he said. "Well, no wonder." "Creak," the dragon asked with his jaw. You got a corroded control disc. Probably regulates your higher reasoning circuits, right? Rusty brain, man. No wonder you're a little confused." He almost seemed crazy, but he caught himself. "I wish I had a replacement disc, but this is a complete piece of circuitry. I'm gonna have to take it out and clean it. Only be a minute." He pulled out the disc and the dragon went absolutely still. The glow died in its eyes. Leo slid off its back and began polishing the disc. He mopped up some oil and Tabasco sauce with his sleeve, which helped cut through the grim. But the more he cleaned, the more concerned he got. Some of the circuits were beyond repair. He could make it better, but not perfect. For that, he'd need a completely new disc, and he had no idea how to build one. He tried to work quickly. He wasn't sure how long the dragon's control disc could be off without damaging it. Maybe forever? But he didn't want to take chances. Once he'd done the best he could, he climbed back up to the dragon's head and started cleaning the wiring and gearboxes, letting himself filthy in the process. "Clean hands, dirty equipment," he muttered something. something his mother used to say. By the time he was through, his hands were black with grease, and his clothes looked like he just lost a mud wrestling contest. But the mechanism looked a lot better. He slipped in the disc, connected the last wire, and sparks flew. The dragon shuddered. Its eyes began to glow better. Better? Leo asked. The dragon made a sound like a high-speed drill. It opened its mouth, and all its teeth rotated. I guess that's a yes. Yes. Hold on. I'll free you. Another 30 minutes to find the release clamps for the net and untangle the dragon. But finally, it stood and shook the last bit of netting off its back. It roared triumphantly and shot fire at the sky. Seriously, Leo said? Could you not show off? Creak, the dragon asked. You need a name, Leo said. You need a name, Leo decided. I'm calling you Festus. The dragon weared his teeth and grinned. At least Leo hoped it was a grin. Cool, Leo said, but we still have a problem because you don't have wings. Festus tilted his head and snorted some steam. Then he lowered his back in an unmistakable gesture. He wanted Leo to climb on. Where are we going? Leo asked, but he was too excited to wait for an answer. He climbed on the dragon's back and Festus bounded off into the woods. Leo lost track of time and all sense of direction. It seemed impossible the woods could be so deep and wild. The dragon traveled until the trees were like skyscrapers and canopy of leaves completely blotted in the stars. Even the fire in Leo's hand couldn't have lit the way. But the dragon's glowing red eyes acted like headlights. Finally, they crossed a stream and came to a dead end. A limestone cliff 100 feet tall, a solid sheer mass. The dragon couldn't possibly climb. Festus stopped at the base and lifted one leg like a dog pointing. What is it? Leo slid the ground. He walked up to the cliff. Nothing but solid rock. The dragon kept pointing. It's not going to move out of your way, Leo told him. The loose wire in the dragon's neck sparked, but otherwise, he stayed still. Leo put his hand on the cliff. Suddenly, his fingers smoldered. Lines of fire spread from his fingertips, like ignited gunpowder, sizzling across the limestone. The burning line raced across the cliff face until they had outlined a glowing red door 5 times as tall as Leo. He backed up and the door swung open, disturbingly silently for such a big slab of rock. Perfectly balanced, he muttered. That's some first-rate engineering. The dragon unfroze and marched inside as if he were coming home. Leo stepped through, and the door began to close.
Beat.
He had a moment of panic, remembering that night in the machine shop long ago, when he'd been locked in. What if he got stuck in here? But then the lights flickered on. A combination of electric fluorescence and a wall-mounted torches.
Beat.
When Leo saw the cavern, he forgot about leaving. Festus, he muttered, what is this place? The dragon stomped to the center of the room, leaving tracks in the thick dust, and curled up on a large circular platform. The cave was the size of an airplane hangar with endless work tables and storage cages, rows of garage-sized doors along either wall and staircases that led up to a network of catwalks. a bit high above equipment that was everywhere, hydraulic lifts, welding torches, hazard suits, airspace, forklifts, plus something that looked through, leaving tracks in the suspiciously like a nuclear reaction chamber. Bulletin boards were covered with full, tattered, faded blueprints, and weapons, armor, shields, war supplies, all over the place. A lot of them only partially finished. Hanging from the chains far above, the dragon's platform was an old tattered banner, almost too faded to read. The letters were Greek, but Leo somehow knew what they said. Bunker 9. Did that mean 9 as in the Hephaestus cabin, or 9 as in there were 8 others? Leo looked at Festus, still curled up on the platform, and it occurred to him that the dragon looked so content because it was hung. It had probably been built on that path. Do the other kids know? Leo's question died as he asked it clearly. This place had been abandoned for decades. Cobwebs and dust covered everything. The floor revealed no footprints except for his and the huge paw prints of the dragon. He was the first one in this bunker since a long time ago. Long time ago. Bunker 9 had been abandoned with a lot of projects half finished on the tables, locked up and forgotten. But why? Leo looked at a map on the wall. A battle map of camp. But the paper was as cracked and yellow as onion skin. A date at the bottom read 1864. No way, he muttered. Then he spotted a blueprint on a nearby bulletin board as his heart almost leaped out of his throat. He ran to the work table and stared up at a white line drawing almost faded. Beyond recognition, a Greek ship from several different angles faintly scrawled words underneath it. Underneath it read, prophecy? Unclear. Flight? It was the ship he'd seen in his dreams. The flying ship. Someone had tried to build it here, or at least sketched out the idea. Then it was left, forgotten. A prophecy? Yet to come? And weirdest of all, the ship's figurehead was exactly like the one Leo had drawn when he was 5. The head of a dragon. Looks like you, Festus, he murmured. That's creepy. The figurehead gave him an uneasy feeling, but Leo's mind spun with too many other questions to think about it. For long, he touched the blueprints, hoping he could take it down to study, but the paper crackled at his touch, so he left it alone. He looked around for other clues. No boats, no pieces that look like parts of this project, but there were so many doors and storerooms to explore. Festus snorted like he was trying to get Leo's attention, reminding him they didn't have all night. It was true. Leo figured it would be morning in a few hours, and he'd gotten completely sidetracked. He'd saved the dragon, but it wasn't going to help him on the quest. He needed something that would fly. Festus nudged something toward him. A leather tool belt that had been left next to the construction pad. Then the dragon switched on his glowing red eye beams, and turned them toward the ceiling. Leo looked up to where the spotlights were pointing and yelped when he recognized the shapes hanging above them in the darkness. "Festus," he said in a small voice, "we've got work to do." All right, that was chapter 12. In a few minutes, we'll be reading chapter 13. This time, you can maybe pause the video, get a snack or stuff, because, yeah. We will be reading chapter 13. See you in chapter 13. Hello, everyone. I hope you grabbed a snack or something, because we're back on record. And this time, we're going to read chapter 13. No, it's been a long journey, and you guys are probably kind of tired. Or maybe you guys are just happy that I'm reading this to you, but I'm telling you, this is a short chat. It's only 2 pages. So, okay, let's do this. It's chapter 13, Jason. Jason dreamed of wolves. He stood in a clearing in the middle of a redwood forest. In front of him rose the ruins of a stone mansion. Low gray clouds blended with the ground fog, and cold rain hung in the air. A pack of large gray beasts milled around him, brushing against his legs, snarling and baring his teeth. They gently nudged him towards the ruins. Jason had no desire to become the world's largest dog biscuit, so he decided to do what they wanted. The groom squelched under his boots, and he walked. Stone fires of chimneys, no longer attached to anything, rose up like totem poles. The house must have been enormous, once multi-storied, with massive log walls and soaring gabled roof. But now, nothing remained but its stone skeleton. Jason passed under a crumbling doorway and found himself in a kind of courtyard. Before him was a drained reflecting pool, long and rectangular. Jason couldn't tell how deep it was because the bottom was filled with mist. A dirt path led all the way around, and the house's uneven walls rose on either side. Wolf paced under the archways of the rough red volcanic stone. At the far end of the pool sat a giant she-wolf, several feet taller than Jason. Her eyes glowed silver in the fog, and her coat was the same color as the rocks, warmly chocolatey red. "I know this place," Jason said. The wolf regarded him. She didn't exactly speak, but Jason could understand her. The movements of her ears and whiskers, the flash of her eyes, the way she curled her lips, all of these were part of her language. "Of course," the she-wolf said, "you began your journey here as a pup. You now must find your way back. A new quest, a new start." That isn't fair, Jason said. But as soon as he spoke, he knew there was no point complaining to both she-wolf. Wolves didn't feel sympathy. They never expected fairness. The wolf said they'll get or conquer or die. This is always our way. Jason wanted to protest that he couldn't conquer if he didn't know who he was or where he was supposed to go. But he knew this wolf. Her name was simply Lupa, the mother wolf, the greatest of her kind. Long ago, she'd found him in place, protected him, nurtured him, chosen him. But if Jason showed weakness, she'd tear him to shreds. Rather than being her pup, he would become a dinner in the wolf pack. Weakness was not an option. "Can you guide me?" Jason asked. Lupa Man made a rumbling noise deep in her throat, and the mist in the pool dissolved. At first, Jason wasn't sure what he was seeing. At opposite ends of the pool, two dark spires had erupted from the cement floor, like the drill bits of some massive tunneling machines. boring through the surface. Jason couldn't tell if the spires were made of rock or petrified vines, but they were formed of thick tendrils that came together in a point at the top. Each spire was about five feet tall, but they were identical. The one closest to Jason was darker and seemed like a solid mass. Its tendrils fused together as he walked. Watched. It pushed a little farther out of the earth, expanded a little wider on the opposite of the pool. The second spire's tendrils were more open, like the bars of a cage. Inside, Jason could visually see a misty figure struggling, shifting within its confines. Hera? Jason said. The she-wolf growled in agreement. The other wolves circled the pool, their fur standing up on their backs as they snarled at the spires. The enemy has chosen this place to awaken her most powerful son, the Giant King, Lupa said. Our sacred place, where demigods are claimed. The place of death or of life. The burned house, the house of the wolf. It is an abomination. You must stop her. Her? Jason was confused. You mean Hera? The she-wolf gnashed her teeth impatiently. Use your senses, pup. I care nothing for Juno. What if she falls? Our enemy awakes. And that will be the end for all of us. Do you know this place? You can find it again. Cleanse our house. Stop this before it's too late. The dark spire grew slowly larger, like the bulb of some horrible flower. Jason sensed that if it opened, it would release something he did not want to meet. Who am I? Jason asked the she-wolf. At least tell me that. Wolves don't have much of a sense of humor, but Jason could tell. The question amused Lupa, as if Jason were a cub, just trying his claws, practicing to be the alpha male. You are our saving grace, as always. The she-wolf curled her lip, as if she had just made a clever joke. Do not fail, son of Jupiter. And that is it for today. Hope I see you in the next episode.